Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th day of May. The merry month of May, Anno Domini 2020. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And it's snowing outside, so you don't have to go out.
Shut up. Don't use the S word in here.
Wait for the weather report
coming up, right? Should I dump them?
Dump them. I don't know if you're allowed to use the S word on the radio. Windows, this is just amazes me. Windows share of all operating systems took a tumble in April, the first full month that corporate and government officials urged people to stay at home and work there if possible as the coronavirus pandemic surged. According to analytics company NetApplications, Windows global OS share declined 2.3 percentage points. That's the largest loss by Windows since November of 2017. And because operating system share is a zero-sum game, when one OS goes down, another has to go up, April saw major advances by two non-Microsoft operating systems. Apple's Mac OS climbed by 0.8 of a percentage point, reaching 9.8%, its highest mark since March of 2019. And Linux, all distributions, shot up by a remarkable 1.5 points to end April at 2.9%, the highest mark since October of 2017. Although the Mac OS increase was understandable, perhaps triggered by people using personal Macs while working from home rather than on a corporate-owned Windows machine, the big uptick in Linux was puzzling. Did every IT professional boot up an at-home Linux box to remotely manage his or her employer's endpoints, servers, and network?
Probably. Yes, they
probably
did.
Probably they did, yes. One suspect that immediately jumped out from the data was Ubuntu, which NetApplications pegged at a whopping 1.9% during April, or 66% of the Linux total, a gigantic increase from 0.3 of a percentage point in the month prior and the 0.3 of a point in February, too. That there were suddenly millions more machines running the canonical distribution in April than in March seems unlikely, to say the least. It's certainly possible that NetApplications may have miscounted, but it's just as possible that many more tech professionals use Linux at home than was previously assumed. The other thing I don't know is and I didn't think to check this, is if Chrome presents as Google, as Linux.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
NetApplications calculates operating system share by detecting the agent strings of the browsers used to reach the website of NetApplications clients, which are among the biggest in the world. The firm tallies visitor sessions to measure operating system activity. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what OS are you using at home? Are you most using at home? The choices are Android, Chrome OS, iOS, iPad OS, Linux, Mac OS, Windows, and other. So far, I have no idea so far. There it is. So far, we have 194 votes, which is great. Windows has over half the votes, followed by Linux, which is a surprise, followed by Chrome OS, followed by Mac OS, Android, iPad, iOS. Nobody said other. So that's 194 of you from, in fact, all over the U.S. and all over the world, which is great to see. Now, I know that many of you will have more to say about this, so if you go to our website at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 9 May 20, what OS are you most using at home and why? So far, nobody has answered that, but I'd love to hear from you as to why you use what you use. And, of course, also, you can just simply give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're hearing from a lot of IT and tech that Windows has so many problems. Every update borks so many. I like that word from you. Yeah. Screws up so many computers. What is it? We're now on like 26 updates, monthly updates in a row that has caused major data loss for some people.
Right.
That people are just frustrated with Windows and don't want to use Windows anymore.
Yep. And it's an issue that Microsoft has not. We have another story that I'll read later about Windows OS X, which I don't think is OS 10. I think it's
Windows X. Yeah. Windows they're using X. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll read that a little later. But the reality is that people like simple.
Yeah.
Chromebooks are simple.
Yep.
Mac OS is simple. You can dive deeply into either one of them.
Yep.
But to simply use them, boot them up, use them, and you're done.
And so many people are using Chromebooks and tablets, you know, iPads and Chrome and Android tablets that work just enough for them. They don't need anything more than that. Also, they get on the web, they look at email, they look at photos, and they're cheaper than a full computer.
Right.
And you don't have to screw with the updates and problems as much that we're seeing a surge in those types of computers as well.
That's exactly right. And what we're seeing is people want simple. And people who also want keyboards are getting Chromebooks, and people who can live with tablets are getting tablets.
Yep.
I have my favorite operating systems, but I'm really operating system agnostic. Whatever you want to use that makes you happy, use it. That's your business. You and whatever happens between an adult user and an adult computer is their business. But the fact is that there are things that are much easier to use than Windows, and particularly for older people, and particularly for people who aren't doing anything but mail and web browsing and a couple of things like that, you really don't need all the complexity that comes with Windows.
And the Chromebook even updates itself without you having to even think about it. And I don't know of any incident where the Chromebook has done an update and it's caused an issue.
No. Of all the Chromebooks I have owned, I had one die. It just, one day it came up, I said, you know what, I can't do anything. I forget the exact error message, but it basically said, can't find the OS, can't do a thing. And then I just stared at it for a second and thought, well, this is quite novel to me. And then all of a sudden the screen changed and it said, reinstalling the operating system. I hadn't touched anything.
Yeah.
Reinstalling the operating system, and it took a few minutes. And then all of a sudden it rebooted, and boom, I was back. And 5 minutes after that, I had all my icons back, all my everything back. I would have lost anything that I had downloaded, but on that particular machine, I had backed up the few things I had downloaded.
Yep.
And the other big major thing, especially for folks that want to keep it simple, they don't have to worry about spyware, malware, viruses, any of that.
Right.
Or updating it and then having it update and then totally brick your machine.
Yep. Right.
It just hasn't been from day one that I've had a Chromebook. You know, it just goes.
I checked Chrome on my Mac, and the user agent comes back. Google, what is my user agent? And it tells you.
Yeah.
It says Mozilla, Macintosh, Intel, WebKit, Gecko, Chrome on my Mac. And on the iPad, it says Mozilla, iPad, WebKit, Gecko, Mobile. So.
Well, interesting. What is my user agent?
I just Googled, what is my user agent, and it told me.
Oh yeah, there's mine.
And you're actually on a Chromebook now,
right? And it does say cross Chrome OS. Yeah, so it says Mozilla /5.0, and I'm on Google. I'm on Google.
Yep.
Mozilla 5.0 X11 cross X86 64. Blah blah blah. Apple WebKit number HTML like Gecko, Chrome 81, Safari 537. So it pretty much tells me it's everything.
Yeah.
But so it does say CROS, Chrome OS.
It knows Chrome OS. So what did your list have Chrome OS in it?
It did not, which is interesting.
Interesting.
But I don't know why.
Maybe they only counted desktops and not tablets.
Maybe.
Or now it's interesting when I see these statistics that Chromebooks sometimes get counted as a laptop, sometimes they get counted as a tablet, sometimes they have their own separate category. They're not either.
Right. And that's one of the problems that Chromebooks have. So if you get a Chrome box, it's a desktop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a Chromebook, it's a laptop.
Yeah.
So,
are there Chrome tablets that don't come with keyboards? Just tablet-ish?
There have been a couple over time.
Or they're more Android tablets?
They're more Android tablets now. And, of course, that's the other thing about the Chrome OS. Because I can run Linux on it, and I can run Chrome on it, and I can run Android apps on it, depending on where I go and what I go with, it could present as any one of those three things.
Yep.
So, yeah, I get it. I get it.
According to StatCounter.com, another statistics, Android is at 39%, Windows at 33%, iOS at 17%, Mac OS X at 8%, Unknown at 0.8%, and Linux at 0.7%.
Right.
So that doesn't include Chrome either.
That doesn't include most people.
Maybe that's
aren't
unknown.
Chrome, right.
Right. But all these Chromebooks are running Chrome OS, so that should show up.
Well, one of the things about this is where are they counting?
Yeah.
Because.
What's their criteria?
Right. Well, not just what's their criteria, but what sites are they checking?
That's
so,
true.
For example, the company that we were talking about, Net Applications, is a back end for very many businesses,
mm-hmm.
but not so many user type sites.
Yeah.
So if you have one of the reasons that they're thinking Linux has gone so high is because so many sysadmins are working from home. Many, many, many of them run Linux.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it jumped so
high.
Well,
they don't want the headaches. I mean, hello.
I switched to mobile OS, and something called Kai OS shows up at 0.12.
Nice.
And Samsung is 0.17. But if I do desktop OS, that Chrome comes in at 1.12.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting how they're differentiating them and
who they're
getting their data from.
What slot they put it in.
I'm looking for that,
but
too.
Many system administrators spend their day with so many multiple systems, both with the back end and the front end user, that running those things on Windows can be very dangerous. I mean, when I was working, I would have faculty who would send me an email with an attachment that would say, is this thing infected with a virus? Well, don't send it to me. I'm the systems administrator. Yeah. I'm logged into our back end all day long. So that was when I set up.
And the answer was usually probably.
Probably. That's what was when I set up a Linux box, which I originally just used for email. And then just started doing more and more and more on it. And eventually just stopped. And I run Windows as a virtual
window
machine in my basic Linux box for the and I don't anymore, but for the very few times. Right now, I only use Windows when I'm looking up the answer to somebody's question for my weekly newsletter.
Well, like I say, I still find it amusing that day. It happened right here in the studio. You're on your Chromebook, and you get a notice that your Windows machine is infected.
Yep. Yep.
I remember you turning that around and look, it says my machine's infected. Woohoo!
Because I knew I was not on a Windows machine, and I knew it was a Chromebook that does not get infected.
Although those messages are confusing. We had someone bring in their PC once because they got one of those messages that said, your Apple is infected. So we were a little happy that the bad guys are now treating Apple as a first-class citizen and amused that it came up on a Windows PC, so they didn't even bother to check the user agent.
Right.
But the guy had an iPhone, so he thought that's what it meant.
Okay.
Good point. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, but if you are, that's an excellent point. If you are a hacker, how difficult is it to check the user agent and then just put that string in there?
Yeah.
Your Mac is infected. Your PC is infected. Your Chromebook is infected.
Yep.
Super easy to do that, and they don't even bother to do that.
Yeah. It's the same thing we see in the fake Flash update notices.
Yeah.
The downloader doesn't even use the Adobe Flash icon. Doesn't use the Adobe icon, doesn't use the Flash icon. If they just took an extra, literally 10 seconds, they could grab the real icon and maybe trick some more people. I guess they don't need to trick any more people because they trick so many all the time.
Yeah, I guess it's the least work for the most return.
There was, what was the name of it? There was one of those software as a service companies popped up to do ransomware as a service. Isn't that nice?
Nice.
They ran for a few months, and then they sent out a notice. So they would write the software, they would distribute it, and they would take a cut from whoever their customer was as their back end fee for running the service. They ran for like 6 months. Said we've made all the money we need to make, and we're shutting down. And then like a month later, two more of them popped up, and the Bruce Schneier and some of the other security people were doing some traces, and it looked like two of the people that were running the first company didn't feel like they had enough money and started new companies. So they let us know, we've made as much money as we need, we're going to go lay on the beach. Okay, we're shutting down the service.
Greed.
So nice. Ransomware as a service. It was a really interesting series of stories.
It is an interesting idea. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hi. Well, I am a subscriber. And
yay.
Have enough shirts to start a store, I think. I haven't had to buy T-shirts in years. Well, at any rate, there is such a thing as a stupid question, so I'm going to ask one. Is that I have one Seagate hard disk backup for my computer. It's a Windows 10 machine. It's a Lenovo E585. It's only a year old, and before I started to do the install, I did the Security Tango. I unplugged the backup hard disk I had. I want to have it at least two and have it plugged into the machine. It lights up, but I'm having a hard time installing it. When I go to Windows Backup and Restore, it doesn't register it, and I try to go through that to that particular app to get it installed, and I just can't. I can't get it.
I don't believe Windows Backup can run two disks.
Well, it's...
So you have to delete the first backup from the first disk and then tell Windows to use
a different
disk. But
he's saying that it's not even seeing it. My first question to you would be, when you plug that in or turn it on, do you hear that hard drive like start up or like a whining that it's spinning up?
Or can you feel it spinning?
Yeah.
Well, it's right here now. Let me see. The light comes on.
Yeah, the lights can come on, but nobody could be home.
Does it show in the My Computer File Explorer as a drive before you even get to the Windows Desktop backup program?
But can I check that right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Opening File Explorer. What I do get on that, it shows up Backup Plus, which is the name of the name of the new file.
So it's spinning up and it's seeing it.
So my guess is that drive has its own backup software you could use, because it does look like the Windows backup program can only do one hard drive at a time.
Well, it is. I unplugged the first one.
It doesn't matter. The Windows backup is set for that first drive.
Yes.
So the only way to make it do a different drive is to change the settings, delete the first drive from the settings, and do a different drive.
Okay.
You can use other programs to back up to that second drive. You just can't use Windows backup.
Which is probably a good idea anyway, because then if Windows backup fails, then you've got another backup program that can run on a different drive too.
And especially the way Windows, is so glitchy at times.
Right.
I mean, you know, why put your eggs all in one basket having, you know, one system do all your backup, like Steve was saying? Hook up your the other drive and use another program. That way you're, you know, giving yourself more versatility if something does go wrong.
And the Windows program simply is not designed to run on more than one machine at a time.
No, it is one machine.
Well, one,
excuse
one
me, one external hard drive at a time.
Right, and that's what I'm doing. It was the mistake I made with the second. I unplugged the first hard drive. I want a second backup, and I put it back into the same USB port. Would that make a difference?
No.
You have to go back into your Windows backup settings and in essence, delete the backup, tell it you're not using that first disk anymore. So then you can set up a new disk.
Because, see, here's what happens. When you use that, all right, it spins up and it looks for that. It goes out into the registry and looks for that information about that drive. And it has a key in there to know what the drive identifier and everything else is. So it knows that it's doing it to the right device.
And then it looks at what files have changed from that drive in your computer.
Yeah, and if you're using a whole different drive, you're giving it a whole, it's like a whole different piece of mail. And, you know, it with different information on it. So it I don't know what to do with this, right. And it's confused. So that's why we're saying on your second drive, find another software backup program and use that to do your backup.
And the Seagate Backup Plus, I'm checking now, but I'm pretty sure it comes with its own backup software.
Right.
So if you open that drive icon, there's probably going to be a Seagate backup agent or backup software that you can install and use that as your second backup as well.
Right. The problem is not anything you've done in setting it up or what you bought or anything like that. The issue is simply that Microsoft's backup software will only talk to one hard drive at a time.
Right. Okay. And if I do that, if I go into settings and...
No, you're better off using a different program.
Yeah, because you're going to.
You're better off using a different program. Microsoft's backup software is not tremendously robust to begin with, and a different program would, in the long run, I think, serve you better.
Yeah, because you're going to have to do that every time.
Right.
When you're switching the drives, you're going to have to go in there, erase that, so you can hook up the other drive. Just use another piece of software, and you, depending on what drive you're using, what icon you're going to click on.
We've always said that Windows Backup is pretty good. Windows Restore is crap.
Right.
I've heard that. Well, what other program would I use then?
The one that came on the Seagate Backup Disk.
If you go into the Finder and open that drive,
the desktop,
from the desktop. If you right.
You're on a Mac lately,
right? If you go from the desktop and open up that drive, you should see a program on that drive that is a backup program that you can install.
Okay, go into the Finder, huh?
Yeah. Well, from the desktop, you should see that drive on your desktop,
or the File Explorer.
Or from the
drives don't show up on Windows Desktop. You have to go into the File Explorer.
Okay,
so go into File Explorer and do it there.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break.
Thank you.
Yep, not a problem. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You know, the S word is bad enough.
Yeah.
What's worse is the A word, accumulation. If there's no accumulation, the S word is not so bad.
My wife was talking to her friend that lives out in Javis Center. They got 3 inches last night.
Yeah, see? Yep.
Well, my friend down in Hammondsport. They had over 3-4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like...
I wonder if Bristol's going to open again.
Oh,
they do spring skiing. I don't know.
I don't think it's high enough that.
Well, most people have a helmet and mask on anyway, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Goggles, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, enough of the S word. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. What's up, Brian?
Gentlemen.
How are we?
Who walked in?
Oh, it's miserable up here today.
Well, luckily you're indoors.
Yep, did I drop you?
Yeah,
we're here.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. I think we got a bad connection here. I've got a Pixel phone, Pixel 2, and I'm afraid I can't hear you guys. I'm going to call back, okay?
All right, sorry. Perhaps he's having problems with his Pixel 2 phone. Yeah.
I'm having problems with the phone. The phone you're calling on? Yes.
Yeah, if you're listening, Brian, I would definitely shut it off and restart it just in case it was trying to do an update or something else. Or it could be just where you are, the location.
Pixel 2 phone is also not a new phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you tried turning it off and back on again?
Yeah, right. So while we're waiting for Brian, I will read the story about Windows 10X. And then we can discuss it after Brian's call. On Tuesday, Microsoft confirmed that it's reprioritizing its Windows 10X development to focus on regular single-screen devices. The Windows variant was originally intended to run on new dual-screen hardware, but Microsoft plans to shift the operating system to launch first on secure and portable laptop-shaped devices. Changes to Windows 10X include a simplified interface, an updated start menu, multitasking improvements, and a method for running apps in a special container for performance and security. Doesn't that sound like a Chromebook?
Yeah, each app is its own container.
Exactly. At the heart of 10X is Microsoft's overall goal to create a stripped-back, streamlined, and modern cloud-powered version of Windows. This simplification has put Windows 10X devices on a path to eventually compete with Chromebooks, which Microsoft has always seen as a big threat in businesses and schools. The Windows and Chrome OS competition is particularly relevant when you consider Google's focus on the cloud with Chromebooks, which is something Microsoft says they're now focusing on. Microsoft has originally been planning to launch Windows 10X first on dual-screen devices, measure feedback, and then tweak the OS for laptops. But a document leaked last year revealed how Windows 10X will adapt for single-screen devices. It's understandable that Microsoft is reprioritizing Windows 10X work after it was clear the coronavirus pandemic was a bad time to start launching dual-screen devices. Microsoft is now repositioning Windows 10X as a streamlined version of Windows 10 for laptops. Most of the existing 10X UI changes and underlying platform work is relevant for clamtop laptops, and it will now arrive first on single-screen devices. That includes the new start menu, modern look and feel of Windows 10X, and most importantly, the new app container technology. This could cause some confusion, though. Microsoft had planned to initially deliver Windows 10X on dual-screen devices, but now laptops will appear with both Windows 10X and Windows 10. Microsoft has already tried and failed with a similar approach with Windows 10S in the past, and comparisons are obvious, particularly since we now know what the S stands for. The sudden acceleration and adoption of remote working has dramatically shifted how we all work and learn in a matter of weeks. How Microsoft now responds to the pandemic with Windows 10X will shape the direction of the operating system for years to come. So are you ready for a version of Windows that's basically a Chromebook? And why would you wait? Get a Chromebook today. Give us a call,
really.
585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. It's toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
It's a laptop-shaped device.
Right.
I like that phrase.
Great.
We don't know what a Chromebook is. It's a laptop-shaped device.
Exactly. All right. We think we have Brian back from Pavilion, New York. Go ahead, Brian. Pixel 2.
Yeah, Pixel 2. Actually, we have very bad cell service up here, so
yeah,
we go through that all the time. The Pixel 2 was okay, but I know this is soundbite's blasphemy, but I bought this phone new. I bought it consumer grade. I didn't get it from my carrier. I didn't really care for this phone very much, to be honest with you, and I'm going to be replacing it very shortly. And if I had to ask you guys about what a second best would be, I'm not sure if I'm going to go back with a Pixel this time.
Sure. It depends. If you need to stay with the Android app, certainly Samsung makes great phones. One of the issues with Samsung phones is the bloatware that's included with them. So make sure you get a lot of RAM because much of it will be taken up with the junk that they add to it. Huawei makes great phones, but we have issues with Huawei security. LG makes great phones as well. If you're looking to leave the Android world and go to the
iPhone,
iOS world. Yep.
Yeah, the SE is a great bargain now. It's basically the latest iPhone 11 in the smaller case with a basic camera. If you're going to shoot a lot of pictures, then the 11 Pro with its dual camera and the 11 Pro Max with its three cameras, it's kind of killed the whole point-and-shoot camera market, smartphones in general. But the way the cameras are sort of the leading feature now, that the joke isn't no one uses their cell phone to actually make phone calls anymore. It's an internet, browser, email program, and camera.
Question for you. What didn't you like about the Pixel? I'm just curious.
Well, I was actually going to mention that. First, the Pixel 2 never had enough volume for me. We are all contemporaries, and I've been a machinist all my life, so my hearing isn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
So this Pixel never seemed to have enough volume.
I agree with that. And
the camera was great. I was very happy that it didn't have the bloatware at all on it. The only thing I really didn't like about it, it doesn't seem to have. I've had a bunch of like Motorola's, and I'm going to stay with Android only because my brother is a huge Apple guy. So he and I have got this rivalry going that goes back 20 years.
Most phones have a volume limiter on it to try to prevent hearing loss, so they can check that off on their spec list. I'm seeing that a lot of people complained about the Pixel 2 volume being too low.
Yeah. I was one of them.
And you can go into developer mode and disable the volume threshold, so you can turn it up louder than it normally does. And there's apps that will boost the volume as well. But I'm trying to see if the three and four
fantastic.
Have that same problem, too.
Three,
I mean, I own a 3A.
Same here. And I wear hearing aids.
So do I.
And no problem whatsoever.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, see, that was it. I was curious to see if they had made improvements. I actually messed around with my phone trying to get more volume out of it, and I just wasn't ever really satisfied with it. I don't have a problem at all with going with another Pixel phone, but also I never was awfully impressed with the battery life I got on this phone from day one.
Well, the 3A, don't go up to the next one.
There's the 3A XL.
The straight 3A. Nick and I both have them.
No, I have the XL. I have the 3A XL.
And one of the advantages of the XL is since the phone
bigger
is...
battery.
It's physically bigger phone screen, so you get a bigger battery in it, too.
3,500 milliamp hour battery.
If you can handle the 6.3-inch screen.
Right. It's a bigger screen, which I like because my eyes are old. Rest of me's fine. My eyes are old.
Yeah.
I never had any complaints whatsoever with the brightness or the resolution of the screen. So,
right. Right, the 3A is fine. The 3A XL is fine. The 4 is also fine. The big difference between the 4 and the 3 is the 3 is about half the price.
Yeah.
3A, rather. The 3A and the 3A XL are about half the price of the 4 and the 4 XL. But you get 90% of the same stuff with them. I've been very pleased with my 3A XL. I just recently got hearing aids. And up until I got the hearing aids, I had the phone at full volume, but it I could hear everybody well, so could all the people around me.
That's what I'm thinking. Speaking for all the people around you, I hope it doesn't have a very loud volume. And
well, no, it had an extremely loud volume.
Yeah,
earbuds. I'm very conscious of using my phone in public. That's one thing that I make a very serious point of. Not being obnoxious with my equipment when I'm out and about.
So. Right, right. Do you wear hearing aids?
No, I don't. I don't foresee that in the future either. It's just that it just doesn't seem to. Maybe it's the timbre of the phone or just something about it doesn't resonate. Probably,
check the 3A.
Yeah, check the 3A. Do this. Bring a pair of your own headphones because that's.
I was going to say go to a store and check out each of the ones, but right. It's a little hard to do at the moment.
Well, right, but
exactly it, because I'm going to have to do this online because this phone is acting up, so it's we're
right, right, right.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I have
the USB cord is dying on me. So
right, I will tell you that I had the same problem you had with the 2, and have none of those problems with the 3A XL.
All right, maybe I'll give them a second shot. See if you know.
And check their return policy. You know, wherever you buy it from, just in case.
Right.
Yeah, and like you say, I'm gonna go back
to opening up the pool today. So you guys take care.
Yeah. Then you can go ice skating.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I got the 3A, and like Nick said, I have never had any problems with the hearing aids. The volume, if anything, I have to turn it down sometimes because it is kind of loud.
I had to do the same thing once I got the hearing aids.
Yeah,
I had to turn it way down.
Well, I appreciate the advice, and I'll give that a real hard look.
All right, there you go, Brian. Good luck. Yeah. Okay, so back to Windows 10X. If Microsoft is turning Windows 10X into Chrome OS, why don't you just get a Chromebook now and not wait?
And why have to worry about it, the updates and everything else?
Right. Now,
that's partly why they're doing the 10X, is that Windows 10, it's pushing 10 years now, isn't it?
It's old.
And it so much has been patched and added and changed, and that's why you patch this thing and these five other things break, that they need to start over.
And they haven't had a good patch in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Still say they should go back. They can relabel it, but put it back to Windows 7.
Well, they're going to call it Windows 10X to make it seem like it's new, but from what I've been reading, it's pretty much a rewrite.
Still use the Windows 7 framework and, you know, because that was solid, and just update the features in Windows 7. That was a brick solid system.
They've gone past it. They're not going to go back. They've gone ahead, and going back would be
face. You take that base.
I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and then just embellish it that much more, add that, you know, that much more protecting, patching the holes for this and that, and come up with the Windows 11.
It was July 2015. It was only 5 years ago.
Wow.
It seems like forever ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of bad stuff happened in 5 years to that operating system. At any rate, with Windows 10X, look, I get it. If you run a program that doesn't run on a Chromebook, like Adobe Photoshop or something along that line, then you absolutely need to buy either a Mac or a Windows box. And I get that. I absolutely get that. But for the 99% of people, the average user, they do email, they do some light gaming, they do a bunch of stuff on the web, and all of that can be done through a Chromebook. And they're less expensive. They're way less hassle. You do something specific that requires a specific Windows program.
Yeah, and you have to first check the store to make sure that there's not an Android app that would do it. Like, I had one, I want to be able to edit photos. Okay. Go up. There's Android apps can download and edit your photos to your heart's content. And they're all being stored up on the cloud. So, they're safe.
And, of course, nowadays, if you get a 4-gig or particularly an 8-gig Chromebook, you can run Linux, and Linux has an immense number of amazing programs that do
editing, video editing. All the way around.
And you can increase your skill set by having more programs you know how to use.
That's exactly right.
That way, then they can raise your rates then too.
That's exactly right. if you're that kind of guy, but one of the things. So, for example, I have a friend. Who has? I do. It's unbelievable.
Whoa.
It's true. Well, he doesn't know any better. He's slow.
Okay.
He's
not. He hasn't learned yet. Huh?
He hasn't learned yet. Who's got a Chromebook and he has an HP printer, and he didn't have. There was no way to connect it because it was not cloud ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you load the HP Android app, and guess what? Makes exactly the connection you need. He could print to it. What he couldn't do was scan.
Yeah.
And the app lets him scan. So he's done. It's that easy. There's also, if you wanted to run Simple Scan from Linux, you could do that. I use all three operating systems quite regularly, running back and forth between apps and things. So, for example, one of the things that I don't do it on this one because this is that super slow machine, but I have regularly run Thunderbird, which is a Linux app, a Linux version of Thunderbird. and a bunch of Android apps and the Chrome stuff simultaneously on my 8 gig machine.
It doesn't hiccup.
It doesn't even breathe heavy. So it's the kind of thing that this operating system is. It's robust. It's easy to use. It's very well written. As Dave has said, updating is just a matter of seeing that in the corner there's a little notification that says reboot.
And you can make it look very similar to Windows or Mac
if you really want it to.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So. And one of the lovely things about it is that it's real easy to add things to the bar across the bottom, and it's real easy to just ignore everything you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it comes up every day, and the way I have it set up and the way most 99% of the machines are set up, when you turn it on and log in, you're at the browser.
Yep.
So pretty much everything you normally do.
It's right
doing
there
on a browser anyway.
And all your tabs can be there. If you're the type of person that likes multiple tabs like myself, I have easily 10 tabs open at a time.
Right. But across the bottom, I have an icon that I can click to start a new document. I have an icon I can click to go to Google Drive. I have an icon I can click to do mail or to do my photos or, you know, whatever I want to do. Keep is in there. All kinds of stuff is in there.
Yeah.
And it's just right there. Click, 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 and I'm in. So, there are ways. You've got to learn. It's a whole new operating system, so you do have to learn something. But I have faith in you. You're not stupid. You can learn this.
Not that hard and drastic shift from Windows.
As we've always said, it's like buying a new car.
Yep. That's what
you still know how to drive. You just don't know where the controls are. And believe me, you've bought new cars. A week after buying the car, you don't remember that you didn't know where the radio was.
Or how to turn the heat up and down.
Right.
Or
what side the gas cap. Well, that what side the gas cap on is tricky, even though there's a symbol on your fuel gauge.
Yeah.
I still, because for, 30 years, my gas cap was on the driver's side, and now my new car, it's on the passenger side. I'll still pull up to the gas tank wrong.
Yep.
30-year habit's hard to break.
Yep, it really is, and I get that. And the same thing is true of Windows. You're used to certain things.
Yep.
But you're not stupid. You can learn the new thing. And
the icons
are
on the left. Well, some OSs, the icons are on the right.
Right.
It's the same icons. They're just on the right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you can do that with your machine. The icon bar across the bottom, you can put it on the left, the right, the top, the bottom, anywhere you want it to be. It's up to you. You get to choose.
Yep.
I usually put it on the left, frankly, because I've got more real estate left to right than I do top to bottom.
But I have so many icons in my dock that they get smaller when they're on the left, because top to bottom is shorter distance.
Well, you have an awfully crowded dock, I have to say.
Yeah, well, because I use those programs once or twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that
I probably don't need Opera in my dock anymore. I don't use Opera. Occasionally someone asks an Opera question, so I open it.
And heaven forbid you had to click twice to get to it.
Yeah.
The one thing, though, I haven't actually looked around for it, but on the Windows 10, Windows 7 and all that, you used to be able to auto-hide the toolbar.
Yeah, you can.
You can
do that in Chrome.
Oh, I know Chrome, but Windows 10, I just haven't taken the time to find out. Normally, you could right-click on it.
That's where it is, right-click, and you can auto-hide. So it's,
I didn't see the auto-hide.
Yeah, it's there somewhere. But
I got to look.
You can really jigger around with the operating system any way you want, make it do whatever you like it to do. Some things you can do right out of the gate, but some things you have to add software.
Mm-hmm.
To do, but one of the things you can do is have it auto hide the and auto hide means that the icons and bar across the bottom sinks down below the screen until you put the cursor down there when it rises back up.
So you get a little more screen space for your apps.
And that's what
you get a little more screen space, but it then takes a little longer to get to that click, which I know bothers you.
And see, it doesn't me because I'd rather have that extra real estate, even that that bar.
Yep.
You know, I like a nice clean screen because of what I'm trying to watch and that type of stuff.
Yeah, there's a group of people that loves nothing on their desktop, and there's a group of people that wants everything on their desktop.
Oh, I had a person one time, what they don't realize, this is back with, I believe it was Windows 98. they had, you know, a nice big screen. It was at the time like a 24-inch screen. They had icons from one side to the other, top to bottom. And they were wondering why the machine was running slow.
Yeah, right.
Well, it does.
I said, really? Well, yeah. I says, why don't you put all these documents in a folder?
Well, then I won't know where they are. Right. So if you save everything to the desktop, you can find it again, maybe.
Maybe.
It's on the desktop.
The problem, as Dave alluded, is that the more stuff that's on the desktop, the slower Windows runs.
Yeah.
And, in fact, the less memory you have, which is why it runs slow, because those icons take up memory in your system. If they're in folders, they only take up memory when you open that folder.
So once I did that for them, all of a sudden it was running a lot faster.
Yep.
And they go, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people rely on that recent list, and they have no idea where they saved their files. We get it all the time. People need their files recovered or need my pictures recovered. So, you know, where are they? What? What folder did you save your pictures in? I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes it a little harder for us to find them, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for God's sakes, if you turn encryption on, make sure you have a backup.
Oh, please.
The whole point of encryption is nobody can get your files without the password.
And that's
including
nobody.
You.
Right. Yeah.
And again, folks, don't worry about backing up programs.
Right.
Back up your data, whether it be photos and documents or presentations, all that stuff that you'd have to try to recreate. The programs, no matter what, if your machine goes south on you, you're going to have to reinstall them anyways. Because they need to be re-registered in the software.
And you'll get newer versions probably when you re-download them.
Exactly, and more up-to-date. So it's always your data that is the hardest thing to recover. I mean, and I'm sure Steve has seen this too. Over the countless years, people bring things in to us, and they'd sit there and say, well, I need to restore it. And the drive is dead.
Yeah. Right.
Where's your backups? I meant to get back up. I meant to do this.
Yeah.
Well, all those meant to be's aren't happening, and you get your data back unless you want to send it off to like a place like DriveSaver, and it's going to cost you some big bucks. A
couple $1,000s, probably.
Yeah. And they don't even guarantee that they'll get it. That's just them trying.
We had one poor guy. He had a 3-drive RAID 5 in his computer. Great. With one drive fails, you don't lose any data. The second drive failed before we took care of it.
Yeah.
Lost all. So we sent the 3 drives and the RAID card to DriveSavers. They said $5,000 to look at it and couldn't get anything.
Wow. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a question from David that Dave will love in the chat, but in the YouTube chat. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. The first hour is done, but the second hour is coming up, so take a slightly longer bio break, and we'll be back shortly with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the Truly Great. And once again, let me say, truly grateful to you that we made our goal and can stay on the air, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We have a question in the YouTube chat. I was just looking. There's an answer from our Chandra, who put his radio sign in there. David says, "What do you think? We're going to throw this softball over to Dave. What do you think of running software defined radio on a Pi?"
Well, from what I understand, it can be done. A number of folks have done it. What he's talking about is on software-defined radios. There's a lot of them now because of the solar cycle. There's not many sunspots and everything else, so a lot of folks are saying the bands are dead. But some of the sunspots are opening up, and people are using their computers to do what they call FT8. And FT8 is just a low signal, low noise, and low voltage. As a matter of fact, you're only using maybe 30 watts on a computer to go out over the world. Literally, you're using your ham radio is hooked up to your computer, and you're trading information back and forth from people all over the world. And they're starting to, there's a number of projects in doing it with a Raspberry Pi. And some folks are even getting the Nexton screens and hooking those up to it so they can sit there and see the waterfall and do FT8 and other talking around the world. I use a Raspberry. I use two different Raspberry Pis, one to run this other software that's called AllStar, and another one that's used for DMR. And again, with these packages, you can little devices, you can set them up and talk to other a repeater, which transmits signals all over the place, or literally out to the internet and connect to the internet and talk to people around the world. I talked to a gentleman just about every other day in Australia. We've become great friends when I first set it up, and we daily, talk a few times during the week, back and forth, how things going there, when the fires were going on. He was keeping me informed on that. And that's, again, all with ham radio.
Right. But in his particular case, he's specifically talking about the Raspberry Pi. Our Chandra says the more RAM you have, the better off you'll be. So the 4-gig Pi 3 or 4.
The 4.
If you're going to do it with the 4, you really need active cooling.
Yeah, you've got to have a decent with a good cooling fan. And the other thing, which is always I recommend, is you go with a better fan, the higher quality, because the worst thing, a ham will always tell you, the worst thing is RF, radio right. interference. And RF gets back into the shack and it causes a lot of noise and everything else that your computer can even give off. So does the Raspberry Pi. So that's why I say go with a more quiet noise and use ferret beads on it. And that'll cut down on the noise.
Right, right. And Archandra, thank you. It is a call sign. I just couldn't think of the word. So you can do that. It's a pretty cool idea. Are these software-defined radios a separate device that you plug in, or are they literally just software on the Pi?
Well, see, a lot of the transceivers now are what they call the most popular one out there right now is by ICOM. It's a 7300. It's the hottest one out there right now. And that's all software-defined. You literally touch the screen, and you can change bandwidths. You can change all your different settings and that just by touching the screen. So it is all software-defined. And a lot of the other smaller boxes that are software-defined literally do FT8, JT65, GT9, these are all different protocols.
But they are an extra box that you plug into the Raspberry Pi. They're not just...
No, those, what I was just talking about, that's a separate unit from the Raspberry Pi.
Right.
But the Raspberry Pi, you can set it up. Like I said, and the folks are getting these 7-inch and bigger Nexton screens, and they're seeing the waterfall on that.
No, I understand all that. What I'm asking is, do you need to buy a separate hardware component, or is it all just software?
It's all software. You can program it right into the Raspberry Pi.
So you don't have to buy any extra hardware?
No, you just tie it into your radio.
So you do have to have extra hardware. It's not just the Raspberry Pi. You have to have a radio as well.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
Well, isn't that what the software-defined radio would be? Turns your Pi into a radio.
That's what I would have thought. Yeah. But apparently it's just software control to an external radio.
See, there's two different things here when we say software-defined radio. There's one box that you can do, say, the other protocols, which they call digital radio.
So let me just ask this question simply. I have a Raspberry Pi, but I do not have a radio.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do software-defined radio today?
You could do digital, what they call digital.
Right. So I don't need an extra radio to do some things?
No.
Okay.
No, you can do that all over the internet. I mean, there's a number. It depends on the applications that you're doing. Because they have like phone, CW, and what they call digital. And digital, they now have the, you can get the Raspberry Pis, and you can set the screen up for that. And you can have it. Matter of fact, there's one thing they call the SDR Play. And you can hook that up to a Raspberry Pi. And that'll let you listen to all the bands and even AM radio and all this other, because it literally goes out there. And you just see it on this waterfalls. And you can click on it with your mouse and listen to people talking, not even having a ham radio in your,
But you got to have some separate device that plugs into the Pi to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That's all he wanted to know. There you go. So
there's a lot of
our Chanda says you can buy a USB dongle to receive. It's about $25.
Yeah, and that's what I'm seeing online. There's a lot of people doing ham on Raspberry Pis. I wonder if that really upsets the purists.
Probably.
There's back somebody in my who's day, I had a radio with an antenna sticking out the roof, and
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Does doing SDR on a Pi upset the purists who want to have a real ham radio?
Well, there's a lot of folks that say
somebody's always upset about something somewhere.
Right.
So, yeah.
Like FT8 right now, because you're using a computer to literally do all the transmission. You're just sitting there clicking. And they're going, well, that's not real ham radio. Well, you know what? At least it's getting you active and you're doing something in the ham community. Whereas right now, because of the band conditions, they stink. They're talking is really to the sunspots. So, the time of day and everything else, it's kind of hard. So this is just another avenue to use your equipment for something else and have fun.
Right.
The whole thing of the hobby is just like any other hobby. Steve's flying in our coin collection. It's something that keeps you busy and having fun with.
Kiddies, it's time to rinse out your hot chocolate mug. Get out of your footy jammies, and we're going to put Uncle Dave back to sleep for another week. Go back to the phones and talk to Ed from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, how you doing? That was very interesting about the ham radio things. I was curious. I was reading on the web about they're trying to sell you stuff, VPN. And I didn't quite understand the it was about 10 pages, and after a while you just kind of nod off. But if you have it at origin, Doesn't the person that's receiving it also have to have VPN in order to read the data that you're sending? It'll decrypt it?
Well, here's the deal. What a VPN does, and for those of you who don't know, VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. And basically, you can think of it as a tunnel through the internet. People might know the tunnel is there, but they don't know what's going on in the tunnel. It's a way to keep your data private. Generally speaking, the VPN encrypted connection is between you and the VPN server. Then once it goes from, let's say I want to talk to Steve over VPN. From me to the VPN server in the cloud is encrypted, but that does not necessarily mean that from Steve to that VPN server is encrypted. If it is, then we have two encryption things going on, but that also doesn't mean that that server in the middle is secure. So VPN is a way to prevent somebody, like if you're sitting in a coffee shop, Not that anybody does that anymore, but if you were sitting in a coffee shop,
if you could,
obviously anything you do over the Wi-Fi, everybody can see.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a VPN, they cannot see it.
For example, if you're there or whatever, and that protects you there. But at the other end, you're saying it goes that there's a destination server decrypted and then send it to the addressee.
Right. What happens past the VPN server is entirely in the hands of the person at the other end.
And
so they may not be encrypted at all, or they may indeed also be encrypted. But even so, at the VPN server, that software is decrypted.
And you have to, because of that, you have to trust your VPN service that they'll keep your information private. There are free VPN services that we're always suspicious of, because how are they making their money? Well, they're selling your data. There are a couple of inexpensive VPN services. There's one that's been advertising a lot on a lot of the tech shows. They're like $5 a month. But they run all their server software in RAM. Their servers don't even have hard drives.
Right.
And there have been cases where police have raided a server room and taken all the computers, and there's nothing on them.
Because once they turn them off to take them out,
they're gone. Yep. There's no logs. There's no record of whatever you did. There's nothing there for them to take.
Right.
One of the things that a lot of people use a VPN for is to change their region. And we've actually heard back from Netflix. So say you like anime, you can turn on a VPN and you can change your destination server. So you can emerge from the VPN back into the public internet, say in Japan, and then you can watch Netflix Japan. We have heard from Netflix that they don't mind doing that because you're paying for the account anyway. They don't recommend doing that because VPNs are often very slow.
Very slow.
But there is one large company that can do some very express VPN services. Leo Laporte talked about it on his Twitch show, where they were in Japan and he joined Netflix and he forgot the VPN was set to Japan for several months after he got back home.
Yeah.
And he started getting the weather in Tokyo. And so, wait, what? Oh, because my computer thinks it's in Japan.
Right. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question?
I think this was like $3 a month. I thought, wow, that's not usually they try to hit you. Or, correspondingly, if the performance is better, then the price is usually higher. And I wasn't quite sure if this was just worth the effort, or, if you've got Norton by whatever anyway on your phone, for example. If that's sufficient, or if this is just overkill, or do you think it's a worthwhile thing?
It does different things. A VPN basically hides your location to a website that you go to.
And hides the data that you're sending.
Not necessarily, because it gets decrypted at the VPN server.
Right. It hides it from local people.
Yeah,
right.
If you're sitting around, like we were saying, at a cafe right. or whatever.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, well, that's good to know. They didn't point that out. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of the ads for VPN services go way overboard about, protect your identity on the internet. Use a VPN.
Right.
Well, eventually, it's got to go to the public internet.
Right. If you're looking for something that's really encrypted because you want to do something that you want encrypted, then the words you look for are end-to-end encryption. If you don't see that, it isn't that.
And most websites these days now are end-to-end encrypted. It used to be only banking sites, but now more and more websites are becoming encrypted because the government's spying on us.
Well, and also because Google has said, if you are a non-encrypted website, we're going to lower your ranking.
And you're now getting a warning in your browser address that this site is not secure, which is interesting because there's a lot of sites that don't need to be secure.
Yeah.
But it is handy to have that encryption. So when your computer logs on to your bank, the data is encrypted at your end, sent over the public internet, and decrypted at the bank, and that's safe. Bank knows where you're coming from because your ISP knows where you went. So one of the common things VPN is used for is to stop your ISP from knowing where you're going.
Right, like they care.
subpoenas.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
Right,
or the so the journalists have a big issue using VPN, so that especially in repressive regimes where the government wants to track down a journalist for saying something they didn't like. And so a lot of journalists will still use VPNs and secure mail. Mail is the other problem. Mail in general is not secure. You can think of mail, email, like a postcard. Anyone along the way can read your mail. They probably won't, but they could. Because mail was never designed for encryption to begin with, it's the encryption add-ons don't always work well, because a malicious server can say, oh, I don't understand encryption, and it goes, okay.
Right. It sends it plain.
And sends
right.
it in plain text, yeah. So there are encrypted mail services. We've talked about Proton Mail. It's encrypted from Proton Mail to Proton Mail, so your recipient has to be on it too. So right. Google to Google is encrypted. Apple to Apple is encrypted. But when something goes out over the public internet, it's often not encrypted. To get from Apple to Google, somewhere along the way, it's got to be decrypted.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Donna from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Donna, what's up?
Hi, guys. I'm having issues with my Chromebooks and Wi-Fi, and it only happens on my Chromebooks. I have a ton of other devices, 3 tablets, 4 Rokus, wireless printer. None of them have issues, but the Chromebooks, the Wi-Fi goes in and out intermittently.
I have seen that. How old is your Chromebook?
One of them is about a year old, and the other one is maybe 3.
And putting this delicately, how inexpensive are they?
They were, you know, one is an Acer 14-inch, so that was over $300, I think.
Yeah.
And then the other one is the smaller 11-inch Acer.
Yeah. Okay, so what I have seen with Chromebooks is that some of them do not, particularly the less expensive and the older ones, do not use newer protocols with their radios. They saved money on the radios by having one of the... There are multiple protocols that you can use. 802.11 is the base protocol, but then there's A and C and N and B and a bunch of others. And what happens is you may have a router that does one of the newer protocols, but a Wi-Fi radio in your Chromebook that does the older protocols, and they're just not entirely compatible.
Since it's both Chromebooks, I would be more suspicious of the router not working well.
Well, here's the thing. Has only been happening for a few months. Up until a few months ago, I never had this problem. And like I say, I mean, I have good coverage in my house between my router and I have an extender. And like I said, I've got a gazillion other wireless devices. And
right.
I never have any problem.
What changed?
Did your neighbor set up a ham antenna?
Right.
That was my
point. One of the problems is it's radio, so you are affected by other things in your environment, and your environment extends outside your house.
And that's why most Wi-Fi routers have 2 bands, 2.4 gigahertz, which is longer range and can go through walls better, but much more crowded with other things. And they have a 5 gigahertz band, which is less crowded but doesn't go through walls as well. So depending on how far away you are.
I have a dual band, and it searches for the best automatically.
Yeah. Right. The router does, you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't mean that your Chromebooks do.
Okay, but why would it just start doing this recently?
Well, but my point is that there may be someone else in your neighborhood who bought a new router that's more powerful and is now interfering with your signal in, say, the 2.4 gigahertz band.
Would that not affect my Roku and any other devices?
It depends on the antenna. It depends on the radio that's in those devices. So, for example, if you have an 802.11n radio versus an 802.11b radio.
All different versions.
You get different results. See, that's Wi-Fi is ridiculously complex.
Can you take your if you could take your Chromebooks to another place? Do they work there? And so that's another test, because their Chromebooks are easy to carry. You go to a coffee shop or bookstore when you could, and
even if you go to by a hospital.
Hospitals are bad because of all the EM coming off the scanning machines.
Yeah, right.
No, but even if, because when I drop my wife off for the cancer treatment, I can sit there over there near the parking lot and be on the U of R guest.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's strong enough that you could at least test it.
We had a customer that lived apparently just on the wrong side of the hospital where all their transmitters MRI machines were. And that whole street couldn't get any Wi-Fi signal because there was so much interference coming out of the hospital.
Well, I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill, and there are just devices that will not work in my home. Yep. But let me give you a quick example. I have two different Chromebooks from two different manufacturers. Back in the days when we could leave the house, I had a standing dinner meeting with a friend of mine. If I brought my more expensive and better Chromebook to that restaurant, I could get no signal. Or I would get that dropout, that intermittent dropout. If I bought my cheaper Chromebook, it hooked right up and ran like a top. Why? Yeah. The hell knows.
Yeah. Broadcom versus Qualcomm.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Which chip does it have?
There just comes a point with radios where there's little you can do to change it. And like I said earlier, it worked great, and then something in the environment changed, but that environment may be in a neighbor's house, not in your house.
Okay.
Did you get a new microwave oven recently? Microwave ovens are 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
So yeah, I know they're notoriously bad for interference.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, sorry. I wish we had an easy answer, but there just isn't one when it comes to Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Thanks.
We had a customer where at random times during the day, two or three offices in their office would lose Wi-Fi. It just would die. And we finally figured out it was the next office. So the shared wall on the other side of the wall was the break room.
And there you go.
And anytime someone nuked their coffee, it just shot those X-rays right out the back. Not the X-rays, microwaves right out the back and would ruin the Wi-Fi. Similarly, at another customer, one whole hallway had trouble, but across the hall, the other offices were fine. We found out that the building's power trunk went down that side of the hall.
Yep.
So we had everyone move their desks to the other side of their office. Worked fine.
That's all you have to do is...
They're farther away from that giant EM.
Yep, and that may be her problem as well. That's the music. It may be that moving those Chromebooks around will solve the issue. It may be just where they are in the house.
Even the orientation. What direction are the antennas in the, in the Chromebook?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We have a text message, which Dave will now read.
Okay, it says, hold on, let me just pat that down. All right, I have heard in parts of New York, Spectrum is dropping the old Time Warner legacy package and making them sign up with Spectrum overpriced packages now. Do you know if just for, is it just for cable? Is internet included too? If so, my $20 a month internet will go to $60. I would rather sign up for Greenlight, but only 15% are interested in my zone.
So we're not sure. In fact, we're not sure where you're getting $20 internet, because even when I had Time Warner, it was $50.
Yeah.
$50 for 10 megabit, and I went to $65 for 100 megabit, so I considered that a significant upgrade. When I switched to all my Spectrum services, my bill actually went down, and we're seeing most people are doing that. But if you somehow grandfathered into some really, really low $20 plan, we haven't heard specifically about Spectrum canceling Time Warner plans. But I wouldn't not believe it. What's the word?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Thank you.
Wouldn't be a shock.
Wouldn't be a shock if they did. I'm digging through the Stop the Cap website. Phil probably has his ear to that type of stuff to see. What they have announced or what the rumors are, what they've done in other cities, and what they're going to change. Now, I do know that Spectrum does have a $15 a month assistive program for people that are on certain types of public assistance. You can get 30 megabit for $15 a month if you qualify. I'm going to post a link to that website as well. We don't know specifically, but wouldn't be surprised if they are. Especially if you want to either upgrade your equipment or get a new modem. That was typical in the cell phone industry.
Right, right.
You get a new phone. Well, that old plan you're on doesn't work anymore on the new phone, so you have to buy this new plan.
Right, like the plan is linked to the phone.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Horse manure, but okay. All right, so I'm sorry the answer to that is we are not as up on that as we could be.
We're not informed on that yet.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave. From Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, all kinds of things. But hey. I guess I don't need to express my opinion about VPN services.
No, not really.
Already covered that. So I have inherited the super admin position for a nonprofit G Suite account. And I could probably use up a whole show with questions, but I'm going to try and keep it down to a minimum. We're looking at doing live streaming on YouTube.
Sure.
There's a YouTube attached to the account. And I actually got it to where I can actually initiate a stream, but it's when I watch on another PC, it buffers it runs slow for about 10 seconds, and then it just starts buffering, and eventually it fails. And I'm hardwired on my end. It's not a wireless issue. I don't understand why it's going so slow. Is that my router or my modem, or is it something with YouTube?
Okay, so first, are both of these systems in your home, in your same home?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're then using twice the bandwidth you would be if you were just broadcasting.
And what's, right. What's your internet upload speed on your service?
I can't pull that number off the top of my head.
That's the important one when you're broadcasting.
Upload is significantly slower than download.
Normally, it's 50 megabit.
Well,
no, it isn't. Normally, it's much, much, much lower.
Yeah. Normal for Greenlight, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, what Greenlight has announced is that they are symmetrical now for at least the duration of the
Yeah, several ISPs have done that.
So it used to be 500 down and
50 up.
50 up, but and now it's 500, 500.
Spectrum is 100 down and 1. One up? 10 up. It might be 10 up. And so because so many people are at home doing video conferencing, a lot of ISPs have started increasing the upload speed without increasing price for the duration.
In addition to that is the quality of your video camera. The higher the quality of the video camera, the slower your connection will run.
Yeah, the camera wasn't. It's just a built-in to my laptop.
All right, so that's not it.
I'll have to look at my upload speeds, but I've run Zoom sessions with no problem at all.
What software are you using to do the YouTube stream?
Just doing it on Firefox is how I'm getting to the YouTube site.
Right.
And as far as I know, I don't need that encoder. That's for like an independent camera.
Right. So if you're just doing it through there, let me suggest two things. The first thing I would suggest is that you get somebody else to watch the stream for you.
Okay.
In a different home.
Okay.
And see if that solves the issue.
Or a tablet on...
on cellular. Turn off the cellular, Wi-Fi. Right. Yeah.
Okay. I'll try that.
Yeah. That might work. The other thing is to try Chrome. It may just be that Chrome works better than Firefox for a Google Chrome to Google YouTube.
Yeah.
Right? I will. That sounds promising. Yep.
And we're using here, we're using a program called OBS, the Open Broadcast Studio, which is a free, basically a multi-camera switcher. So I've got three cameras feeding into my computer, which is how we do YouTube with a multi-camera shot. And you can do effects and all kinds of neat things. Nick had mentioned earlier about doing green screen, so I saw how to do it. Now I've got to get a green screen behind me or behind us. But that gives you a lot more options than just one camera feeding in. I've got text overlays. I've got a counter on it. I've got a date and time on it.
Yeah. Well, I'll poke at that. The other thing I've noticed about going into YouTube, the fact that I'm the super admin on G Suite doesn't seem to count for very much other than letting me in the front door.
Well, it does give you a lot of back end stuff that you probably aren't using or care about at this moment.
Yeah, working on it.
The other thing is how fast is your computer?
Mine's pretty good. It's a homemade Windows machine, about 5 or 6 years old.
And how good is your video card?
Several hundred dollars.
Now there you go. Then that's all right. But so yeah, try the two things we already suggested. See what happens.
Now, it looks like, from what I can tell with the YouTube, is that there's channels, which are almost like mini accounts, and I need to create permissions. Each time I create a channel, I got to go in and poke in the permissions for each user of that channel.
If it's a private channel, yes.
But if you make a public channel, then anyone can watch without needing any extra permissions.
People who can actually be managers.
Oh, yes, you do, yes.
Okay, all right, that's one. Now, also, as Steve just mentioned about encryption within Gmail, would that include my Gmail accounts have the domain name, got user@domainname.org?
Yeah.
Those would be encrypted also?
If it's going through Gmail, it is an encrypted connection. Oh.
So from Gmail address to a Gmail address, yes.
Yeah.
As soon as they send it to some other address, it'll get decrypted somewhere.
Right. Okay.
So let's say you were you were Dave@example.org.
Yeah.
And you send it to Steve@example.org.
Yeah, okay.
That would all be encrypted. But if you send it to, if you send it to me@gmail.com, it would be encrypted, or ask Nick, it would
anybody
be encrypted.
Anybody within the Gmail.
But if you send it to somebody at Yahoo or whatever, it will not be encrypted.
Right.
Within that parameter.
Yeah, okay. Then the other thing, I guess you can dual stream because we've already been streaming on Facebook.
Yep.
And there's software that will actually stream to Facebook and YouTube at the same time. You got any suggestions on that?
I have not done that myself, so I couldn't tell you what works well.
OBS does that.
Okay.
I just Googled it and it said yes, so I got to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
You might as well add Twitter and Twitch and...
Sure, you might as well...
Do them all, yeah.
Do them all, why not?
Well, I guess that covers my questions.
All right, there you go.
Thank you.
Okay, we're getting a lot of people calling in, as usual, the last 10 minutes, everybody's calling in. We may not get to all of you, and I'm sorry about that. Again, call earlier. It's really all we can ask you to do at this point.
Don't call often.
Don't call often. Just call earlier.
Just call earlier, yeah.
But we will try to get to as many people as we can. Excuse me. I beg your pardon. If you keep getting a ring, just hang on. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I got a non-computer related question that's radio related. I listen to your program via FM radio with a wire up the wall in my apartment, and doing a lot more radio listening these days. I get, every once in a while, I get something that's like another radio station just comes blasting across. Sometimes there's just a lot of static that comes in waves. Listening to what you talked about before, I'm thinking maybe the person next door is doing something.
It's certainly a possibility.
Would putting an antenna on the roof of the building reduce that?
Probably make it worse.
You could run just a simple wire out the window.
What's probably happening is there is a radio station on a similar frequency nearby.
Yeah.
I see there's a 90.1 FM in New York City, so that's probably right, that's too far.
For the radio that you like, what about going to the internet and listening to them over the internet?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
I mean,
that's the best way to do it.
That way, you know, you can have that running in the background on your computer and still be doing something else.
For example, Jazz 90.1, you can listen online or you can listen through the app on your phone.
Yeah.
And there's zero interference there.
How far away is Sudbury, Ontario? Because they're broadcasting on 90.1.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm right here in Rochester.
Yeah, the FCC. The FCC is set up so that radio stations on similar frequencies aren't in nearby areas, but there may be something in Canada that's just skipping across the lake.
Yeah, especially the way radio waves travel. You know, they can go all over the place. And I was talking about that before. But go to the internet. You know, you can save yourself a lot of hassle, and that way it's uninterrupted. You can, you know, with the volume, turn it up, turn it down if you're doing something.
Here's an old question. Do you have an analog tuner or a digital tuner?
That's true.
Analog. It's an older radio.
That certainly is
so
an issue.
Try the internet and see how that works for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. By the way, Sudbury, Ontario is 401.5 miles away.
There's a whole lot of Ontarios on here at the 90.1 FM. I don't recognize any cities, so maybe they are far enough away to they shouldn't interfere. I would hope the Canadian is it CAA? I don't know. CCC? Canadian Communication Company? And the FCC kind of work together so radio stations along the border aren't overlapping each other. But maybe
who knows?
Maybe there's some. I remember in the early days of cell phones, the Model Airfield was out in Spencerport, and we used to accidentally get the Canadian cell phone operator because we were so close to Canada out there, and so far away from Rochester.
Right. I had a friend in Buffalo who suddenly got this huge bill because he was roaming.
Yep.
And it turned out that he was connected somehow to a Canadian thing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Yes, I have a Chromebook, and I'm having trouble when you put it in, you put something on it, it'll go to it, but it'll be half of a screen. Now you have to make it bigger when you use a box. Why would that happen?
Are you saying that you've got an external monitor of some sort?
That I know of, no.
Okay.
So just a website on your main screen?
Yes.
And sometimes everything is fine, and sometimes it's...
Anytime you turn it to if you want sports or another thing, you hit to it, it'll go half.
And what's on the other half of the screen?
The other half would be sports, showing you baseball. So it'll say, if it's like Facebook, it'll say log into Facebook, you hit Facebook, and you go on to it, you might have games or something on it, or sports, and then you have to hit your small box to get it bigger.
Oh, okay. So that's in that particular case, I think what you're describing is actually a function of Facebook, when you hit the thing that makes a video bigger. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. On some Facebook pages, it doesn't go full screen.
Because you're supposed to read the ads.
Right. They want you to read the ads that are around it. So it will not go full screen. That's not a function of your Chromebook. It is a function of Facebook.
Or other websites that
right, or
ads.
Other websites, right.
Is there any way to fix it or anything?
They're
no,
really,
I shut it down.
Yeah, they're
I
really
kind of... back on, and it's the same thing.
Right. Because it's not being controlled by your Chromebook. It's being controlled by the other end. They're specifically doing that so that they can show you the ads around the edges of the screen, and there's nothing you can do about that since they're the ones controlling that.
I did make my window smaller, and it hid the ad panel.
Yeah, but what he wants to do is see it full screen, yeah. And that's just not gonna happen.
Yep.
So
sorry.
I'm stuck with it. So,
yeah, sorry, Ken.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the side effects of getting a free internet service is that you get to see all those ads.
Yeah, that's pretty much how they pay for it. All right, thanks, Ken.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see ya. Yeah, you don't get much choice in that. It's unfortunate that somebody's got to pay for something, and if you're getting it free, somebody else has got to pay for it, and that's ads. And that's the way that works. I get it. We don't necessarily like it, but you know, I make a penny or two off of my ads on Ask Nick and a couple of other sites. But of course, off the Security Tango, for example. But unfortunately, most people nowadays are using ad blockers. That doesn't make the thing full screen for Ken.
Yeah.
But it does block the ads, and so I get no money from that. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah. Good afternoon. Lately, I've been getting a pop-up on the lower right corner of my screen. Sometimes it indicates that it's from a service called Watch TV Now, or sometimes there are other ones that seem to pop up. It's some kind of a... I check my extensions to make sure nothing was in there that would produce that, and there's nothing that I have that I can suggest would be producing this. It may be some malware that's crept in. I wonder if you guys have heard of this.
What operating system are you running?
It's Windows 10.
It was probably some website you went to that wanted to install a toolbar for... More people are watching TV online now.
Yeah, it's definitely a browser hijacker.
It could. So you want to run the full Tango, you know, malware, Bison, Super Anti-Spyware. It could also be, there's an advertising mode built into Windows. So Windows will show you advertising. I'm trying to find how to turn that off.
Well, there is, Watch TV Now is in fact a browser hijacker.
Ah.
So you can.
What if I want to watch TV now?
Yeah. you can go into Control Panel, uninstall programs, and find Watch TV Now.
I've done that. You know, it's not there. That's the problem. I've looked for it, where all the spots where you're supposed to look.
Yeah, they have different names. The one I'm most familiar with is Julieta.
Julieta.
J-U-L-I-E-T-T-A.
But Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware should remove all of them, no matter what their name is.
I run those. I run Malware Bytes. I run Anti-Spyware. I run Avast. So I've got a lot of stuff here.
Well, okay. What it does, when the malware installs, it changes your search engine. So you may have to go back into your browser settings and remove it from your homepage setting, your new tab setting, your history setting. Because that can make it come back, too.
Right.
Those settings are in the browser?
Yes.
Those settings, it's just, okay. Mm.
Right.
Now, I use Chrome or Firefox. So
you want to set them both.
Browsers.
Yeah, the smarter malwares will set all your browsers. I've seen some that just do Chrome and leave Firefox alone.
And vice versa.
And vice versa,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, most of them nowadays do both. All right.
Just another reason to go to that other operating system that you mentioned.
Linux. Yep.
Linux, right.
Yeah, Linux might help that, depending on how it gets installed. All right, thanks. We got to go.
Thanks.
That music tells me we're done for another week. I want to apologize to everybody we didn't get to. You got to call earlier. Phones light up, pile up at the end of the show.
The show is 12 to 2, to 3.
Right. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We're done for the week, but we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And again, we're truly grateful to you that we can continue to remain member supported. Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you?